I make a business up to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I bring the shrimp business to the top.
Yeah.
And the Vietnamese become started. They call jealousy.
Yeah.
And they start to be fighting the price. And the Vietnamese come. And I say, no. If I continue to do like that, it will be down. Mm-hmm. Only one thing, I sacrifice back out again.
Yeah.
And so I back out and retire.
Got it. Okay, Mr. Lee, go ahead and press record, please.
One, two, three.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Lee, for meeting with us today. The reason we're here is that the Vietnamese have made an enormous contribution to the Louisiana seafood industry and just to the history of South Louisiana as a whole. But that history is not going to be recorded unless people like you share their memories with us. And basically, what we're trying to do is to record these, to preserve these memories for the next generations. So I'd like to begin by getting your permission for us to record these materials. Copies of them will go to the university here in Lafayette, to LSU and to Louisiana Sea Grant, also hopefully the National Sea Grant headquarters in Washington, D.C., where they will be used for research in the future. So is that okay with you?
It's okay.
Unfortunately, there's no money involved of this. No one's making any money off of this, but it will be used by researchers who will be writing the history of the industry, of the area, and of the contributions of the Vietnamese
community. I'm very glad to hear you talking about that. I come here so many years, my dream to make my people come up. When we come here, we're so miserable. And so we do any kind of job to be survival.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot of obstacles by the people, by the jealousy, by everything. And we still stand still because we're thinking about we're lucky to get over here and we try to do anything for our children.
Mm-hmm.
And finally now I think the children grew up and they made it. I'm very happy.
Well, I think it's one of the great success stories not only in Louisiana but in American history.
Yeah.
So we'd like to begin by talking, well, first of all, we would need your full name, your birth date, and where you were born, Mr. Lee.
You want me to speak the Vietnamese?
Yes, please.
Okay. Tôi tên là Lê Lành. Trước khi tôi tới nước Mỹ, ở Việt Nam, và tôi đi lính, thì tôi sẽ trở lại. I go back in the history, Vietnamese history. Hồi xưa nước Việt Nam chúng tôi từ 200 năm về trước bị người Pháp đổ. Nước của chúng tôi là một nước là thời thời đó kêu là còn chậm tiến, cũng giống như là quê mùa không biết gì hết. Thì người Pháp ở Âu Tây đi qua, tràn qua bên bên Đông Nam Á thì thấy nước Việt Nam của chúng tôi quá dễ dàng, họ tách, họ lấy, họ chiếm nước chúng tôi chừng đâu 2 tuần lễ thôi, tại họ có súng đạn. Tụi tôi hồi đó là chỉ có giáo, gươm với là đánh võ, không có tài nào thắng nổi cái người có súng đạn, nên bị người Pháp tách over và làm đô hộ. Tôi bị người Pháp đô hộ khoảng 100 năm. Bắt người Việt của chúng tôi lên núi kiếm những cái củ quý, lặn xuống biển kiếm trân châu, lên núi kiếm ngà voi, làm tất cả những việc gì mà làm nô lệ cho nước Pháp. Thì sau một thời gian chúng tôi bị nô lệ như vậy, người Việt Nam chúng tôi từ từ khôn lên, rồi chúng tôi mới trở thành build the revolution và chống lại người Pháp. Thì hồi trước lịch sử đó, là có rất nhiều người muốn chống lại Pháp, nhưng mà chúng tôi không có ai giúp đỡ hết, thành là người ta phải đánh du kích ở trong rừng, là lâu lâu đi ra ngoài thành phố hay là ra ngoài cái chỗ rình rình ấy, người Pháp tới chỗ nào đó thì ra đánh du kích. Thì cái đó là những lúc sơ khởi. Về sau thì có những người mà anh hùng của trong nước khởi lên những cái chương trình mà chống Pháp. Rồi từ từ sau một thời gian sau, chừng 5, 10 năm tới 20 năm, thì cái chương trình chống Pháp nó trở thành to lớn. Thành người ta kêu là người Việt Minh. Việt Minh tức là người Việt thông minh, trở thành chống Pháp. Và tụi tôi tiếp tục cái chương trình chống Pháp cho tới năm 1954. Thì hồi đó là Hồ Chí Minh là trở thành là một cái một danh tướng, là người mà chống Pháp, rồi trở thành cái chương trình mà đánh Pháp cho tới một cái thời gian. Cái trận Điện Biên Phủ là trận đánh giữa Việt Minh và Pháp thì Pháp thua đó. Thì tôi vắn tắt là tôi bị đô hộ cho nước Pháp, rồi tôi chống lại Pháp. Thì sau khi Pháp thua rồi đó thì nước Mỹ nhảy vô đó. Thì hồi năm 1954 là nước Mỹ nhảy vô. Nước Mỹ nhảy vô thì là giúp một cái ông đó, đó là một người kêu là tên là Ngô Đình Diệm, ở bên học, du học bên Mỹ. Người Mỹ đem về và đưa ông lên làm tổng thống. Rồi phân chia ra hai miền là miền Nam và miền Bắc. That means North and South. Rồi cái miền Bắc á, thì Cộng sản là Hồ Chí Minh. Cộng sản và dưới sự giúp đỡ của chủ tàu và Nga. Còn bên Pháp, bên khâu cộng sản đến bên của Việt Nam mà ông Ngô Đình Diệm đưa về bởi người Mỹ đó, thì kêu là của không cộng sản đó, của người của tự do. Thì khi ông Ngô Đình Diệm về á, thì phân chia nước Việt Nam ra làm hai miền, một miền Nam và một miền Bắc. Thì miền Nam là ông Diệm coi. Nhưng người Mỹ lúc đưa ông Diệm về, đối với tôi thì người Mỹ không phải là chỉ giúp nước Việt Nam thôi đâu. Nên người Mỹ đem người Việt Nam về đó với cái interest của người Mỹ, tức là người Mỹ nhắm thấy cái hoa lợi ở trong nước Việt Nam rất là nhiều, nên bước chân vô nước Việt Nam với tính cách giúp đỡ nước Việt Nam. Trong khi đó đó, nước Việt Nam tôi còn nhớ hồi đó là tôi có chừng đâu 12, 13 tuổi, năm 54, tôi sinh năm 1942. Và tôi năm 54 thì tôi mới có chừng 12 tuổi. Thì ông Diệm về, thì lúc đó ở miền Nam của tôi đó có chừng đó 20 cây súng M2, tức là súng carbine M2. Còn miền Bắc thì bắt đầu là đánh du kích giáo mát, rồi có súng đạn của người Tàu với người Nga giúp. Khi mà hai miền phân chia nhau ra rồi đó, thì người Bắc được giúp đỡ bởi người Tàu và Nga, còn bên miền Nam được giúp đỡ bởi Mỹ. Trong khi đó người Bắc bắt đầu dùng súng AK-47, AK-47, thì bên miền Nam vẫn còn súng M2. Thành do đó người Mỹ mới nói, tôi cung cấp vũ khí giúp cho mọi người đánh, tôi cung cấp vũ khí cho hết tất cả. Ông Diệm, cái người tổng thống mà người Mỹ đưa về, không muốn. Tại vì ông nói là khi mà đem về như vậy, nước của chúng tôi sẽ trở thành đại chiến. Tại sao chiến tranh mà thôi muốn chiến tranh? Đó. Rồi người Mỹ mới gửi những người vào là cố vấn đó, để teaching người Việt Nam, để dạy người Việt Nam về súng đạn và sử dụng tất cả những khí cụ và máy móc của người Mỹ sẽ viện trợ cho Việt Nam. Nhưng ông Ngô Đình Diệm là cái người ông tổng thống, đây là tôi vắn tắt cái lịch sử, ông đó không muốn vậy. Thì người Mỹ cùng với người Việt Nam, cùng một số người Việt Nam build a revolution, làm lên một cái revolution lật đổ như vậy, để đưa những người khác mà vâng lời người ta hơn lên. Thì từ đó, người Mỹ mới đưa súng đạn vào và mới là viện trợ cho chúng tôi máy bay, tàu chiến, rồi hải quân, không quân, hậu lục quân, tất cả viện trợ súng đạn có thể một năm tới chừng 5 tỷ. 5 tỷ là 5 tỷ. For they bring everything for help to Vietnam around maybe a year about 5 billion. Cái 5 tỷ đó, đó để giúp súng đạn cho người Việt Nam để đánh lại với là miền Bắc. Thì cái giặc của tôi bây giờ mà tôi ngồi tôi suy nghĩ lại thì cái giặc giữa Nam Bắc đánh với nhau đó, đó là cái sự buôn bán vũ khí giữa nước Nga, nước Tàu và nước Mỹ. Tôi trong lính, tôi đi đánh giặc cho tới năm 1975. Tôi đi máy bay thả bom. Thì mỗi ngày tôi đi tôi coi cái trái bom, cái mặt để 1940, 1938, 1939. Tất cả những cái bom đạn mà của đệ nhị thế chiến xài chưa hết, người Mỹ viện trợ cho chúng tôi để chúng ta đánh giặc. Thì khi mà người chỉ viện trợ chúng tôi để đánh giặc như vậy, người Mỹ được cái lợi gì? Không có cái lợi gì hết. Nhưng họ viện trợ mỗi năm khoảng chừng đâu tôi nói chung là họ viện trợ nguyên một lúc khoảng chừng 5 billion. Thì bây giờ họ lấy lại bằng cách gì? Họ lấy bằng cách là chúng tôi có mineral, có mỏ than, có mỏ dầu hỏa, có mỏ vàng, có mỏ đủ thứ hết á. Họ sẽ product những cái mỏ đó để mà đổi lại những cái vũ khí mà họ viện trợ cho chúng tôi. For understand what I'm saying, you don't understand what I said. The American bring equipment, gun, munition, tank, airplane, everything for Vietnamese fighting with the North. Why they did that? See, that is the old interest. They not give away nothing. They say, my finance people say, why? They say, no, you have, they come and argue, you have a lot of mineral. You have a lot of things like gold mine, diamond mine, everything. See, we produce that. You don't have nobody to produce. We have. We have equipment, we have everything we produce. And when we produce, we take only 25%. Yeah. I guess like that. And you take 75%. Okay. And 1 year they produce about 2 billion. And today sit down my finance people and say, okay, they say here, 2 billion, our share is 25%, 500 million. I take it. And 1 billion and a half for you. You see, and my finance people bring it out, okay, and they say, hold on, you owe me $5 billion. $5 billion, airplane, tank, munition, gun, everything. And so, I take it, you still owe me $2 billion and a half, or $3 billion and a half? And they continue. But nowhere you can see one war, the American state long like that, over 20 years. And get killed 50,000 soldiers over there. And my share, my country share, about 1 million young people get killed for nothing. For the interest of the rich people. And that is I get away like that, little bit example like that. And the Americans stay over there, and we fighting with the North. In that time, they consider it the Vietnam American army, but the second strongest in the world after the American, and the Vietnam, everything the American had, the Vietnam had, and the North people just ambush how they can be. And I don't remember how much, but in 1970 sometime, Westmoreland, the general Westmoreland over there, brought our army, go to the north. In 1 week, we take over the halfway, half of the north. The White House called him back. He lost one star because he obeyed the order from the White House. And right now, Westmoreland wrote the book, The War Never Wins. And we in that side, see. And in 1975, 1974, in that time, I flew 7-3. At the beginning of 1975, in January, February, March, they opened, they just opened for the communists come in. No defense, you see. And our army go to fighting and support the American, have to back up. And when over there comes so hard, we look at the American, we throw a long time, we don't know. That reason, when I come here, I try, in year and year, try to figure out why we lost. Finally, I guess, I'm not very positive, but I'm with, you see, because the interest of the American interest, they have to let us lose. We remember in 1974, I evacuation from January, February, March, April, every city. After a week evacuation, secondary big airplane take off and take a lot of people evacuation, army evacuation. Finally, we from the north right here, we go over the south, almost the end of the south. I say, no way, we lost. And I tell my children, only 4 year old, 2 year old, I told my wife, I don't know, maybe who. Or I die, or we have to do something, you see. And in the end, you see, they dropped the bomb in the north. The American B-52 dropped the bomb, day and night. We thought we won, because they dropped the bomb and dropped the bomb day and night. The north pulled a white flag, that means surrender. They stopped, they come negotiation, and they leave the north man. When they leave the North Wind by, they have to make a deal. And we lost in April 1975. The 30 April 1975, everybody run, accept the army and all the military people don't know nothing. The last minute, I don't have no choice. I stole the SC-130 and I bring my family. I go to Utapau. That is the one runway for B-52 from the American over there. You see? And we come over here. That is shortly to make you understand.
Sure.
But if I focus on that, maybe that's a long, long story.
Where did you fly the C-130 from Vietnam to where?
To Utapau in Thailand.
To Thailand.
That Utapau, that is a long runway airport. Mm-hmm. So the B-52 can landing over there, and they pick up from over there to drop the bomb in Vietnam easy. And we came over there.
How did you get from Thailand to the United States?
When we came over there, one thing I always ashamed. I come over there, our high class officer there already, and we don't know. And I look and I shake my head. And when I land the airplane in there, I call to landing, nobody answer, you see. And so I just check the wind, that is the law. Mm-hmm. Say emergency, we land. And they have the one follow call. They follow us to the end of the runway and they stop us. Right there. We stop and they have a one big, I remember they have a big car with a high ladder. They run after the airplane. In the end of the tail, they climb over there, they erase our flag. They have a pen, the pen over the flag. I sit in the airplane, I said, we lost. Huh? And we go to the end of the runway. And in that day, I have three flight crew members with me when we stole an airplane. And I said, damn it, we lost. And they say, okay, they take us, have to go down, go to the parking lot and stay there, open the door. And I think I'm funny, I say, maybe this is my last time to fly. See, so count how many people on the airplane. I stand in the door, in the front door, there's the only one way out, and I count 280 people. All is a single soldier, because they maintenance in the airport. When we stole the airplane, they just run, because that time they shoot the rocket in the airport, explode everywhere. And they run in and they get in there, accept my wife, two children, that is female and children. And we count 285, and my family five, that is 285. That's in my last flight. And 101, one star, come. And they look at me and say, who want to sign to sign the airplane over? I mean, sign to leave the airplane. And I signed. No, I think they said one major. I mean, it's not major, he's major, he signed it. And when we walked to the shed, to the hangar, I saw all the high class officers there. Oh, so I get mad at cursing. And the guy major go with me, he said, da da da. When you come back, man, they will push you in jail. I said, damn it, we lost already. Well, they over here, and we fighting over there, we lost already. Why is it so here now? And when you come over here and come down, and they ask for the flight number, everybody have to go to the fill out the paper to do the immigration thing. And I sit down and I don't know. And the one star asked me, what do you want? I said, I don't want to stay over here with those people. And he smiled. He said, what do you want? I want to leave. And then that night, he put me in one C-141, me and my family, C-141, fly straight to Arkansas. And it took me only about 5 days from Vietnam to Arkansas. Really? And those people stayed at least about 3 months after that before they made it in Arkansas. But that is the past, because I come over here.
And it was a new beginning.
Yeah, come here and I start a new beginning. With me, all the low, the small country, low civilization, not smart enough, that is the bait for all the big countries. So. All the bay, that means I make example like a Middle East now. They have oil, have everything. The American and the European bring them up. Everything built up like a high tower, high house, everything. And when they smart enough, they say, we don't need you anymore. And they start to betray them. And finally, they build like a revolution, like a human, like you right now, you have to be fair, you have to be no dictatorship, nothing. They build a revolution against the dictatorship, you see. And you see, after 2-3 years, the meaning destroyed. And what next? Then the European and American come to rebuild that country. And they trade them for the business. Same thing. Right now, because of the war, and Europeans don't have no job. and the economy, everything, bank, no money, everything go down. And I guess maybe next year everything will be blooming back again. But in the end of the parable, the hyperbole, they go up, they have to go down, you see. And but not the big country. The big country, they're so smart, everything. With me, the American country, they are ahead of the world, 100 years. They're smart like that. All the computer we use now over here, I use in 1965 in Air Force. That means behind them they have a lot of things stuck up behind. They don't use it. Like the war in Iraq, the first war in Iraq, Saddam Hussein, they're fighting it in Kuwait. And Iraq say, Iraq lost, but they say, hey, American, that much. And they go to the rush, they buy the airplane, everything. Strong, high technology than American. Mix 28, mix 30, some, I think, the best one. And Bush offered them, say, I can let you bring all your people, everything, and your money, everything, and we have the place for you to stay. Just walk away. He said, no, he stay. Because he believed right now he's the army stronger than the American. But they gave him 20 days, and in the end, 20 days, they gave 24 hours, and in the end, they asked him, they said, no. And they started to hit a 1 week thing, destroy everything. All the airplane from mid from Rush cannot take off, just leap up and they explode right away. They don't know why, you see. Because the technology is so high and right now nobody knows how far the American, how smart the American technology. Right now for the laser beam, nobody knows nothing. The American, right now they control all how to display the laser beam. And the laser beam we use for the surgery in the hospital and everything. But the other country don't know anything about the laser beam. And they cannot depend on technology. Oh, like the China now become the strongest economic country. Who bring them that? That's the American. American make them become the strongest economy. And they start right now, they start to study what we give to them. They just come and rebuild what we want them to rebuild. But the top, the central in there, the head in there, the Americans still hold it. But right now, the world worry about the China. That China is so strong and fit. Okay, now I...
You got to Arkansas.
I got that.
Now, you mentioned earlier you went to Texas. Did you go to Texas before you came to Louisiana?
No. I will tell you that.
Okay.
When I get to Arkansas, and I get to maybe few thousand get the Arkansas for traffic. They give me one room, big room in the front, on the top, my family over there. Every day, I lay down underneath the barrack to study English. Because we have to study English. I study hard, I study every day. And my wife and my children go to take care of the food, everything, and bring home and eat, and I study, teach. And 2 months after that, my instructor, American instructor, they're looking for me. They found me in Arkansas. And the one that they found me, they said, hey, good. I know you made it because they call very, very kamikaze. And you don't scare nothing, and you're the top student I have. It, and I know you. He's looking for me in California, in Florida, and he don't found it for me in Arkansas. And he said, "Hey, you fly back again?" He said, "Later." He said, "Right now, you will go to school. We pay you 1,200 a month to requalify the the license over here and fly back and forth for the Eastern Airline. Oh man, I'm so happy. And everybody heard that, so happy for me. See, I come home, my wife sit down, I told her, and she don't say nothing, and that night she cried. And she say, over 10 years you fly. Every time you walk out of the house, I never expect you to come back. And right now, you think you fly? And make me think, and I have to sacrifice. See, sacrifice here, I've come telling them, I turn them down. And they give me the call, they say, when you change your mind, call us, you see. And I change my, and I know what, and the immigration tell me, hey, you get the top job, you don't take it. And why want to know what you want? I say, give me one day. I go home, I'm thinking, all my life, when I flew, I rode to combat everything. Everything I fly, I just pray one prayer with the visionary. I say, if you want me to die, let them shoot me in the head, or let the airplane explode. I don't want broken arm, broken leg, no, I don't want nothing. I'm very weak, I don't want that. And 13 years I'm in the military, I don't have nothing. And the last minute, when I took off the airplane, I pray one prayer too. I say, if you can, you make me, I don't know where I go, but you make me set in one place somewhere. I promise I make enough money to raise my children and become a good people. I say, I don't want nothing. And in that time, that day I come home and I thinking what I promising when I take off. And I come back to see the immigration. I say, I want to go somewhere old Catholic, you see. And I like to live in the warm weather. I don't like to live in the cold weather. And they say, yeah, but the old Catholic were hot of looking for that, you see. And I stay there about 2 months. They call me in and say, hey, this place above 95% is Catholic. And hot temperatures, you have a ride like a Vietnam. And he asked, I said, okay, well, you see, I'll be there. I believe. I said, I took it. He said, but no help, no big job, nothing. You have to fight for your life. And I come to the Abbeville in the August 1975. I come to Abbeville, Argentina.
It was a good month to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like to Louisiana.
Yeah.
Very hot
and humid. Okay. The like fun thing, when I first come, so miserable, I'm the first Vietnamese come, nobody know me. And sometimes the people think that is a prejudice, because the people don't know nothing about the Vietnamese. And but a lot of soldiers from American come to fight in America, to Vietnam, and get killed over there. And they don't like, they see me, they think, oh, you are Vietnamese? I say, yeah, awesome, I don't like it. And I start to, I don't know, and I have to what to do, everything. And I come to Richevelet. I come over there and I say, I want the job. And they say, okay, I need a job. I give the license, the Air Force license. I have a license, fly engineer too. I said, I'm the mechanical engineer too. And they say, no, we don't need the engineer, but we need the mechanic. But you work on a car before? I said, no. He said, no, what do you want to do? Wash car? I said, yeah, take my wash car. And they pay me $2 minimum wage to wash car. Oh, I'm happy. But I'm from the South District. I walk every morning. And that day I walk in the street, one American look at, then they stop, they come down. They say, you Vietnamese? I say, yeah. and say, hey, I went 2 years over there, and I fight, and I'm in Vietnam War too. He said, would you like to be a friend? I said, damn it, I need a friend real bad now, you see. And they come and say, he brought me home. I ran the house on the South Test Street.
Mm-hmm.
The room, about this one, about $120. I have one bedroom, one kitchen, and in the front I have like that, $120. And then a lot of rush. Every night my life turned like the rush friend. But we don't know how to kill the rush. In that time we're so naive, we don't know nothing. And she's so scared. And I go to work like that and say, and he called me, see, I don't have no food. And he worked in a rice mill. But the man is a Glenn Swear. He worked in a rice mill. Yeah, Glenn Swear.
Yeah,
he worked, and he brought me. On Saturday and Sunday, he bring me go to the in the farm somewhere to shoot the crowbait for the food for me. I never forget that. And he bring me to go fishing, because I say, if they have water, if I have rice, I just go fishing and I make my living. I don't worry nothing. And they bring me to go fishing, and then we become friends. Mm-hmm. And in that time, we connect. I'm the one to start the boat people, because the boat people run away from the Vietnam, get the pirates from Thailand killed and raped in the Gulf, and I start that program. I talk in the Rotary Club,
mm-hmm.
and the people start to sponsor the Vietnamese come to Abbeville. And I started to teach them the American language. In the night time, I started teaching them the American language. And after 6 months, we're looking for a job for them, and I don't have no job yet. I'm still washing cars, you see. And I go to trade school to study. In the night time, I study about the oil field technology, something like to work in the oil field.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring at least about 10 or 15 families to the Abbey. And they are fishermen, and we're looking for a job for them so easy. Because they come to the Intercoast City, they have a net shop over there, and they come to just repair the net. They make $3 an hour. I still wash out $2 an hour. but I still do it, and I enjoy today. And one day, Glenn bring me to go fishing down to the Pecan Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the oil field, the oil field. There's the smoking coming up. I say, what is that? I say, oil company. That is a big money. Over here, that is it. And I look at him and say, I want to be there, I want to work. He said, oh no, I'm a veteran, Vietnam veteran, and they don't hire me, and how they hire you? In that time, the Chevrolet sell me the one car, that is Chevelle 69.
Yeah.
That is no air conditioning, nothing, just a frame. And run, I work in, I start in mechanic working, and I work in wood, and I run that, and one day I say, I go to apply the job over there. You see, that means after more, not quite a year, about 1976, I will apply the job over there. I went to go put an application. One of them, nobody know me. I'm so skinny, and that time I'm 120 pounds. Skinny, tall guy, come over there, put application. And they gave me the application. I went in the corner, write it out. And about 20 minutes, I finished. I bring to him. And I look at him. And he looked at, and I say, back it out. I say, I just put my application. I back it out to the door. He looked at me and say, you got the job? I say, no job? And I said, no job. I said, he said, no job. For that, I'm so happy. He said, I said, when I can come to work? He said, you go to the Amityville, to this doctor. He gave me the name doctor. I go to check the physical check and come over here. Okay. He said, I said, so simple like that. And I'm so happy. I back it out. I go home. I talk to Chevrolet. In that time, Chevrolet gave me one corner to work in, a mechanic working. I'm very good in electronic and everything, and I start, a lot of people like me because I just look and I'm become a good mechanic over there. And they say, come here, say, I give you notified 15 days before I go to work somewhere. I say, where are you going? I show them the Columbia Gulf. They said, damn, that is the top job in this over here. Just go work, don't have to, 15 days, nothing. And I got to work.
That was Columbia Gulf at Pecan Island?
Pecan Island, at the High Mainland. Oh. And I come over to work. And but before that, I have to remind that this, when I come to work in Chevrolet, first day I come to work in Chevrolet to wash car. He gave me the key, wrote the camera. The camera in that time is about 5,600. That is a fancy car. In Vietnam, I tried to jeep. I don't know nothing, you see. I go out there, I said, damn it. I have to look at, look. Take me half hour to put the key. I said, damn it, I can fly the airplane and this one I cannot start. And I put the key, I turn the key on and I start. Then I started look at, I put it, reverse, I leave it, and back up, and I forward back. Take me about 45 minutes before I run slowly to the water. And I work about 2 weeks. Nobody knows I don't have no driving license. and they told me, I said, hey, give me your driving license so that I fill out the paperwork, everything. I said, what? He said, driving license? I said, I don't have nothing. And he said, you don't have nothing. Go take your driving license. I said, and they show me where the driving license, they give me the company truck to go to take the driving license. I went to the police driving license, I went over there. The guy said, hey, you have a written test? I said, what? He said, written test? You have to have a written test first and then you have a new driving test after that? I said, no, I don't have nothing. Did you learn? I have a book to learn now? And they throw me a book. I said, no, I have to get the license. And I walk out to the door, and they have the, in that time, it was simple in South District, they have that. I walk out the door, they have a bench like that. I sit down there, I open the book, I read it. Take me an hour and a half to read and reread it. They have only 100 questions. And I try to remember everything. After an hour and a half, I come in, I say, I take the test. And I don't know how I pass. They say, you pass. I say, David, those, how many questions? He say, you don't miss nothing. I said, I don't know. And then they go out, they take a test, I drive there, and put the signal light. The car don't have no signal. And they stop, they come back, they say, they give me the license, but they call a Chevrolet, they get mad on them. Say, hey, you send one guy to take a driving lesson, I don't have a no license, no signal. And then I have that. And then I come to work in Pecan Island. The guy hired me, and then Zone Breaker, his superintendent. And the foreman and throw me a thick book like that, here. That is the blueprint for the plan. The plan of 50 acre land, you see. And they have a dehydration plan, down liquid, everything, mm-hmm. underground. And I come, I take the book, I go home, I say, man, I can learn to fly the airplane. Run out the book and the plan like that, I can, mm-hmm. I study day and night, and I said, day and night, study, and I go to work over there. One day, the superintendent, Zone Breaker, he walk it out of the yard, he go around. He very, very tough guy. When he go around, everybody have about maybe 28 people walk in the yard, running on one side. Nobody want to see him. Except me, I continue to do what I have to do, you see. And he come to me and he tap in my shoulder, hey, why you don't run? I say, why? I say, because of, you see, they run in the corner over there. He said, no. I said, I don't know. I do what I have to do. And he said, let that go with me. And I go over here and I say, hey, you work over here at Turimanare? I say, yeah. You tell me what you know about this plant. You see? And I said, well, I bring him to the inlet valve. You know, that is the pipeline, 38, 36 inch pipeline. And the engine, the compressor, turbo engine, the pump. You know the pump, how many horsepower the pump? The pump, 28,000 horsepower.
28,000
horsepower. And I just read, I don't matter. And I follow, I go from the inlet valve, I go to the knockdown liquid, go to the, go out to try the gas and knock down the liquid and go to the engine, pump out. Take me and him work about 3 hours. And go to the engine, after the engine, the pump to the line, pump here, pump up to, we sell the gas in New York and Maryland and Washington DC. We had a 3,000 mile pipeline, 36 inch pipeline. And I say, out of this one, I don't know nothing. And he don't say nothing. He said, come in the office, and me and him work. And I said, he go in the office, he sit down. He look at me, he say, son, you know? I said, what? You know more than the guy who worked 10 years over here. Oh, so I saw a few in 6 months, suppose the, we call the utility man, when we come to work, to be operator B, have to be 3 years. 6 months he bring me up to operator B and make everybody jealous. You know, and in 2 years he bring me to operator A. You see? And one may bring me to operator B, a lot of conflict, you see? A lot of people conflict, especially the Kunes down there. Mm-hmm. And some people, some guy, he is retired from the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. They're in Vietnam, and they don't like. And I get the trouble at the beginning, I work with the guy, he hated the Vietnamese. And when I change the filter and blend, I have a hot head and I use a pipe and I change the valve. I sit down. He take the wrench, hit in the top of my hot head, and I say, damn, you, how come you come here, take all the job to people over here? We don't want you to over here, you see. And when he put a pop in my head, I have a pipe wrench in my hand. I try to swing to hit him right away, you see, my nerve. Okay, I get up, I don't even, I think about my children. And I chop it down. I don't say nothing. And about 2 years after that, one day I walk in the yard, they have an instrument in there and to take care of the jet engine, the pump. And they pump out and the superintendent called me, I operate the B, I took note for the old compressor, all the level, how they run every day. And when I walk to there, the instrument repairman there, and they test the engine is there. And the superintendent tell me, hey, Lee, you think you can run this engine? I've been watching them run. I say, can I try? When you bring up that engine, it's so big engine, the building bigger than three buildings like in my home, but the big building, when you bring up the engine, the building shaking like that, because the search for the air, the pressure, they pump about 2,000 psi pressure in the pipe for 36 in this pipeline. If you don't control it right, you see, it's shaking, you see. And they sit down there, the instrument repairman bring up, is still shaking the engine. And he say, okay, go ahead to let him, the engine, because I heard you fly in the jet engine, try to bring this up. And I come over there and I bring up. I start the engine, I bring from the bottom up to the level to pump it out, smoothly. And everybody look at, damn it, you never tried before and you did that. And the superintendent smiled. And then after that, 2 years, suppose 6 years to become operator A, 2 years I become the operator A. And he the one that, boom, they say, no, no classification, nothing. I bring him to the operating. Damn, that is a lot of conflict again. And I take a five, I work at the three shift, like a graveyard, day and evening. In the graveyard, they sleep by myself. I work in the yard. But when I get the operating, suppose the valve is open. One, the time I come to, I have to check everything. The valve open, they close. Before they left the ship, they close. Then I have to go book by book. I check everything. That take me real hard. After the first 3 months, I have to check everything. And the other four guys work with me, sleeping. I can tell nothing because they big mouth, they good old American friend, and I'm just only Vietnamese. I get mad. I think of how I can take over this one. And I go buy one camera. In nighttime, they sleep. I took the picture. Everyone sleep in the corner. I put in my truck. I open the tire, took my truck. I go walk in the yard. Oh, then they found it. All the picture. They come. Oh, they got a cursing. They go, hey, I say, hey. You will go before I go. Don't try to push me out to this place. Hey, this one is approved. You tear it up. I have some a lot of left. You see, and he said, you will go before I go. Right now, every night you come and walk over here. I let you walk only 4 hours. The other 4 hours you do what you want. But the 4 hours I give the potion. Everyone have to do what they have to do. And I just go check on. If you don't agree that, or you go or I go. You see. And after that, I start. And finally, about 8 years, and everybody started loving me over there. And then when I up there, then they send me to go offshore to take care of 2 platforms offshore. And in the same time I work in like that, I helped the Vietnamese to work in the boat. So the boat people come to work, and I put the money together to buy the wood boat first. The boat was like a 40-foot wood boat. And those people, you know,
this was at Intercoastal?
In Delcom.
Delcom, okay.
And they bought about 2-3 wood boats like that. 1 year they failed. Suppose the boat only 20,000, they told me it's 50,000. We still buy 50,000. We put the money, 2-3 guys put together, put the money back. We buy the wood boat, and all the Vietnamese come to work in over here. They don't know. All the fishermen, they don't speak English. Even now, they don't speak English. Even I taught them every day, they still don't know nothing. You see, they cannot open their mouth to say nothing. And only one thing, to get a good thing. One thing I see, they're good in the welder. And in the night school, we send to the helper for the welder.
Welder helper.
And years later, they become the welder. No, they become the welder. And they start to work in New Iberia, all of them start to work. And which one good in the Gulf are looking for them to work, put together to work with the American by deckhand. We don't know nothing about the equipment run in the boat over here, but let them work about 1 season, they know everything. You see, all the winch on the way to drop the net, the way to pull the door, everything they love. And we will put the money together and buy one boat for 3 best guys to work in that boat. 1 year they pay off that boat, they sell that boat to the next guy. And we do like that, step by step. We bought about 10 or 15 boats in Delta. And in that time I still work offshore. And I study about it. I look and I say, one day I see like that, I come to Delta, I saw they unload for 1 freezer boat. The freezer boat about 70 foot, and they go fishing only about not quite 3 weeks. They come over there, they unload the shrimp, freezer shrimp, about 75 to 80,000 in 3 weeks. In that time, that is the top money, because every boat make about 20,000 a ship. That time, 20,000 is big money, you know that? Because in that time, we just see only the $20 bill. You never see the $100 bill, you see? And I saw that, and I say, yeah. And the Vietnamese started building boat a lot. We bought around 20 boats around, we had it. And I have an idea to build a boat. And I have a friend in New York that I come for the wedding, but he's a marine engineer. And I sit down and I say, can you draw the blueprint to build a boat? He said, yeah, I can do it. I said, go ahead to build. And in 1986-87, I built 17 boats. 91 foot engine is a engine. What is
Is it the Caterpillar?
The Caterpillar engine. The one is the one is a big engine that time. The 3408. Well, I have a two engine at 3408, a two engine for one boat, but the one big engine I put on one boat, I build 17 boats like that. And you know what I do? I make a project because I help. They told me I'm own the bank over here because everybody I bring to the bank approve. If somebody ever bring, they don't approve because they know I check the people real good. I come, I don't have to go sign nothing. I said, well, this one, he work real good. And they said, approve. They approve about 150,000 to buy the small boat. And the people thought I have a company in the bank called Vermilion Bank in Kaplan. And I just come to help. And the bank see I do real good, everything. And one day, I bring the project. I told them, I will build 17 boats. They say, you can do it. So I need some money. And they lend me the money. I said, okay. I said, the project, I built 17 boats. I'm not built to make money. I built for the Vietnamese. And after I built Vietnamese, I will open the shrimp house. And those boats that come to sell the shrimp to me. And after they have meeting, Boris, the meeting, they say, lend me the money. After I built 17 boats, I lost 100,000. You see, because they call a money no name. You see, you don't think, but they could pop out and you don't control it. And then the motor come out, I lost money. After I build 17 boats, those people bring the shrimp to me. I open the one in the Intercoast, mm-hmm. The first one in the Intercoast open. All the big boats come to me.
What's the name of that boat?
Vermilion Seafood. I opened the first one.
Yeah, but the boats.
Oh. 17 boats. I don't remember all the names. You see.
What were some of those?
All those boats now still running good. No boat is trouble. Okay. The one is two engine now. It's usually come to check block over there.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a two engine. And I opened the ship now. And I took all the business from American.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a trouble with them. After, you know, I have all kinds of trouble, and one day they have about 4, 5, 7 shrimp houses around here. Every year around April they have meeting, and I have meeting too. And they call me from meeting of that. And I sit down at that meeting. When in the meeting, all those people now die, except me still a survivor. And on the meeting, and I say, it's not fair. After they say everything, they say, somebody have an idea before we shut up? And I say, I raise my hand. I say, what? I point the finger in everyone's face. I say, if one day happen to my family or to my dog again, if one of member of my family get killed, or like you threat to kill me, you see, I will trade all of you. See, I just let you know I come over here very, very hard to get on to make my living. I don't be conflict with no one. I love everybody, but don't try like that. You see, I do the business the same way because I share because I call all the boat. I cannot not go to you. Myself. I split out the share. I'm not greedy, but don't, because I'm fighting in the war. If you push me to the end, I will kill all of you and I suicide. So I told him, remember that, you see, don't do that to me. And after that, everything quiet. And I'm so happy now. And I do the business so happy until Chip is done. Right? And one day, after Chuck and Tao betrayed me, I sit down. Usually I sit down, I don't have no friend, nothing. I went in the church by myself. I sit down in the church, I think, what I have to do. And finally I remember, I say, the church make me, pop me up and say, hey, what you promised when you push the power to take off, to run away from your country, what you promised me? I promise I will come one place. I don't need a big money. I just need enough money to raise my children, become someone. And right now I have a big job in the Gulf, make about 80-some thousand a year. I work only 5 months out of the year. I work on, work up, and I have 1 month on vacation, 5 months out of the year. 80. And you have a seafood business over there. And right now, they betray you and you try to destroy them. Now, after so many days, I just passed the church and I think about that. And I thought, I sacrifice. I said, oh, good Lord, Virgin Mary, you remind me, I will sacrifice. And so I would just let him have the business. I can take half of the business easy, but I don't take this, and I just take it. I say, I make a deal with God. I say, okay, I withdraw with a condition. You have to let my children become someone in the world. And I withdraw. I work in the Gulf. And every afternoon, I stand in the platform. I look around and say, Dad, why we have to do that? And I say, we did already. And one day I say, I have to do something because I have a lot of families still survival in Vietnam. They're very miserable. With my 85,000, enough for my children's education and the house, everything, is not enough to help them over there. And I say, I have to do something. And I try to kamikaze one more time. I reopen the shrimp. I thought, I will open the shrimp house. And I come down there. That is, who's the lady?
Rosie.
Yeah. Rosie, she in the barn. Mm-hmm. And in that day, suddenly I come to visit.
Right. I forgot about Rosie. Yeah.
I come to visit her. And she said, look at that. This is the man I want. I want you to take over my business. I said, damn it, why you say that? I say, only you can do it, nobody can do it. And then she say, I'm in the bar. I say, wow, whatever. I still owe the bank $300,000. And the IRS after me and a lot of people after me, everything. And I'm sick with the seafood business. Why don't you take over? I say, well, what I have to take over? She give me something about $400,000. When I come to the bank, I think, I go to the bank say, I said, you again? He said, yeah. He said, but I said, this time I'm asking for $1 million. I said, bring the project. And I said, bring the project. I have all the boat. And they lend me the money. I come and quit the job. And the superintendent comes and said, damn it. He's so get mad. He said, I want you one day to be a superintendent in one location in the Columbia Gulf. We choose you already. Why you did that? I tell them the same thing. I say, I have a lot of people miserable over there, so I have to take a chance. I just pray if I can make money. I help those people over there. I'm very satisfied. And finally, the CEO from Texas come to see me and say, and they jump on me and say, finally, okay, I do. But they're so nice. I said, okay, I let you out. But, oh, like my insurance, everything, protect me until 65, they still let me have it. I'm so happy. I said, I never believe it. Right now, they still protect my wife until my wife says 65, the insurance. And before I left, I said, hey, if you don't make it, come back. He said, oh, I'm sorry. I said, to him, I hold his hand. I said, I'll never forget. And I come. In 5 years, I pay off the bank. And 7 years, they start to play the game price.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, if you do like that, we waste the time, everything. And in that, I feel I have enough money to help the family, help the people. And then I put around 300,000 to help the people over there. And I put for this house, to pay off this house. And I have about 200 put in the mutual fund. That's it. I stopped. And I come back to Vietnam. And from 96 until now, I raise, I sponsor one seminary. And right now we raise about 61 priests. We have a 28, I sponsor by myself 28. The rest, I call all the friends, each one sponsor one. And right now we have 61. And we raise money, build 3 churches. And every year, they know every year I went back over there, about twice a year I went over there to help them, you see. And the seafood business over here, the Vietnamese work real hard. They deserve. But in the Vietnamese, they have a 3 class of the people different. It's not one class. The guy have education, and the high middle guy, that is have education around 7th grade. And the guy education, no education. When you do the business with the Vietnamese, we have I have 100 business different. I have to know that guy what he want. I have to satisfy him with the way he want. And the other guy different way he want. The American cannot do the business with the Vietnamese because they don't know. They don't know the Vietnamese that way. Yeah. They can betray you. One word, they get mad, they take the boat, they go away right away. And to work in the business with the boat people, that is the hell. It's not the heaven in there now. And now when you do business like that, when she come and she have her in-law to do business, she know. Mm-hmm. She know like I know. But when I get out there, I always remember who I am, where I come from, and how I can get like today, you see. And one day, I decide to come to visit the guy, the guy helped me, that is Jean Vito, helped me together, and I want to go to hell here. And he breathing with the machine and oxygen. I come, he's so happy. Said, I've been waiting so long. And now he's sure. Oh man, everybody say, don't let him talk too much. But he sit there, talk with me about 45 minutes. He don't want. No, everybody say, hey, put the machine, he keep talking. And I say, and when I walk out, I told his family, what happened to him, you have to let me know. And the day the funeral, his funeral, nobody know. When the end, the priest blessing the coffin and they start to stand up, I raise my hand, I walk up there. I honor him. I honor him because like this, when he he walked with me in the yard. And he asked me what I know about everything. He come to the office, he said, you know more than a guy 10 years over here. And he added one thing, he said, but it's not because you have a lot of certificate, a lot of education, and I hire you. No. I said, why? He said, because I saw you every day in the church. In that time, I come around Lent season, and every morning, I'm so sad. I walk to wash car, actually. I pass to the Midland Church for the church, and after the church, I go. And he went to church too, and he saw me in there, and he said, "That reason you get the job," and then I honor him. I talk to everybody about the history, how he helped me, and how he told me. In that time, he told me, I speak French. And he said, forget your French language. Over here is English. Forget your French language. Forget. Don't try to translate between the French and English. Just English, and forget about the French. And I did that. And find out, right now I still have an accent in
French. Vous étiez un étudiant dans une école française?
Huh? Oh, c'est longtemps que je parle pas le français. I finished college, 2 years in college French, and I finished a baccalaureate of French. Mm-hmm. And that reason I come with some, if I speak French, I will mix up everything, you see, because of the vocabulary. English vocabulary comes from French. About 65% is vocabulary comes from French. But the pronunciation is a little bit different, only.
Mr. Lee, during that time, okay, your children, how old were your children when you left there?
One come over here, Chin, the guy right there, mm-hmm. 2 years old. And the daughter right there is the 4 years old. Right now he's 41 year old and she 44 year old. He almost 42 and she 44. And he's a doctor and she's a business. She do real good. She do better than a doctor.
Well, I think you can be proud of both.
Oh no. That reason I say I train my business for the good Lord blessing my children. And so I never regret nothing.
During that time, when you were working at Ray Chevrolet, was your wife working too?
No, she's sewing. She's sewing.
She did the sewing?
She if somebody want to fix something.
The alterations.
She just make $3. Every floor, everything gone, alteration, make $3. But when you talk about my wife, I will say like this. I work like 40 days normally a week in the Chevrolet or in the offshore. Mm-hmm. She worked 110 days a month, a week. She worked a month, the people work how many a week? How many?
40 hours a week.
40 hours a week, but 160. She worked 210 hours a month. She worked 3 jobs. She alteration from Mary Ellen, mm-hmm. and she go to work for the Up Dallas, and she come home. Somebody come to fit the clothes at home. She does that, too. And she come home just about in the night time to cooking. And after that, if I will ship work, sometimes me and her don't see a week. We don't see each other. You see. But now we think everything we did like, and all the Vietnamese do like that too, because the most thing we don't have over here, that means we don't have no education. Mm-hmm. And when we come here, we have to use the labor to get up. And the labor have to be hard working. We don't know, but the people, so far right now, I forget everything about all the bad people treat me before, but I'm very humble and love them and think that all the American so naive. I said, because the American don't know nothing about what the politics doing and what the rich people doing. And you all have to send your children to go fighting for them, but you don't know. Because of patriotic? No. Because of they, because of they privilege, they interest. They don't care how many Americans will get killed. The interest, if the American bring $1 to over here, they have to bring back $3, $4. That is business. And one country so high technology, so smart in the world now, that is America. And I'm proud to be here, but I say like that, the American will be 100 years ahead of all the countries around the world. And you don't know what the technology the American have now, even me, I don't know. But sometimes, if some reason you can see, like we talking together like this, you see, the satellite bring it in and they show, they can record your voice, they can do everything. And if they don't let nobody know, how they know? And that reason they say smartphone, no smartphone. They guiding by the laser. You see, like I have one time, the bridge. There's the Ho Chi Minh Trail. They transport the munition and gun together. They go to the bridge and have two mountains like this over here. And the bridge cross like this and Ho Chi Minh Trail. And we have to drop the bomb, the bridge like that, we have to go like that to drop the bomb. They have the gun on the top of the two mountains. If you go in the rain, automatic in the rain you go, they shot you down. In one afternoon they shot down 8 Vietnamese airplanes. And the American bring one C-130. They have one machine, small machine, the box, I don't know, because in that time I fly in that airplane, the box. They fly to around like that, and they're guiding the line, the laser line, to the bridge. And one phantom, they drop the bomb, only 250-pound bomb, the small bomb. They fly across, they drop the bomb, the laser guide the bomb, explode the bridge. Easy. That in that time they testing in Vietnam, okay, and we dropped the food, munition, and all the supply for the people in the jungle. We have to drop 1,200 feet, and big airplane like that, 1,200 feet, they shot so easy. And 1 week we get shot 4 big airplane, and we call them, and they bring one C-130 flying. And they fly high. They get shot too. And they come back, they say, oh, stop, don't shot, don't drop anymore. I say, how? We fly 20,000, 25,000 feet above the target. And in there, they have a beam, we don't know. But the beam, they hook up together with our VHF. If you fly 25,000 feet, you fly across the right, you have. If you fly tick, tick, tick in the left, if you fly right in the middle, they hear like that, you see. And they say, 10 seconds before you drop, you come to the line already, and 10 seconds you drop, and we have open the door, everything, and we're ready to drop, and say, and they count. But you don't let the, you have to go right in the, they say, drop, pull around. And 25,000 feet with the parachute, right over to the top. Ha! Miracle! We don't know nothing. You see, they have to think about the wind, the everything. They set everything. Oh, wow. And the target, that is just like a one football yard. That's it. Mm-hmm. Shut it there. That's a miracle. You see, we don't know. But we lost the war. But now the American come back in there. That's the deal, the major deal. Now they come back, they come back.
Do you still have family? Family, brothers, sisters?
I still have one brother and two sisters over there.
Okay, and so they stayed?
When I come back, they're so miserable. And their children cannot go to school because we in the side, they call the enemy of the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
They don't let our children and the relationship go to the college.
I was worried there was any kind of retribution because you were in the army.
Yeah.
If they suffered because of that.
And they go to college. You know what I did? I come back with that. Only $5,000. I come to feed them. They open, let them go to college. After 10 years, right now, I have
Seven nephews doctors.
I said, though they very smart, but they say, hey, you get in. Yeah, do something. Don't drop nothing. I say, yeah, we don't have that. And my two sisters right now in the family have about 10 doctors because they married with a doctor and like that. I have them for the education. If someone cannot go to school, I give one lump sum for them to go in the business. If you don't make it, that's you. I don't have the chance like you have. I give you the chance. And so far right now, I think maybe three is not make it. The rest about 40 made it real good. And they have a house good like this. You know, everything is good. Now they in the high class now. But yeah.
So how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have one brother left.
One brother.
And two sisters.
And two sisters.
Yeah. And one sister have a six children, and one sister have two children, and one brother have a one children, and all made it good in the college. Because if without the money, they don't let the people study over there. Because one country, right now, they run by the dictatorship, and no reason, nothing you can, we have 1 million. 1 million called communist doctrine, communist control 80 million Vietnamese over there. Nothing. They control the people enough for the food, enough for living. They don't let you have more food. If you have more food, they're thinking you will do something. If every day you have to walk so hard for the food for the family, you forget everything. That is a good one. Good thing. Okay, because when I speak the Vietnamese language, that is a different. I come over here, and so I used to be speak like that, and I come to the Vietnamese, and I have to thinking like this, and say, hey, if I talk to the Vietnamese, it's easy for me. But I talk to the American, if I say something and nobody understand nothing, and just look at me.
Do your children both speak Vietnamese still today?
But the grandchildren, no. The grandchildren, they start to come over here, just speak few Vietnamese. I ask them, why you don't learn the Vietnamese? They say, Mama, don't teach me. Because they parents work so hard and go home and just talk to the children in, but it's not because of that. But the American I study, they proud. Because if you become the American, it's one generation, they connect, you forget about everything. Eight hours every day in school, you figure out all the children come to school. Maybe they come home, they see you only 2 hours, 3 hours at school. What you can talk to them? You don't talk to them too much. Just eat and prepare the homework and go to sleep. And year like that. Even you do everything, they still forget the language. And they speak. Even right now, some family start like a dam right now. They have to bring their children like in the, we have the community and they have a teacher teach the Vietnamese language in the vacation time and they come over there. That help. But when they go to college, forget it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the American, I say to me, super communist. The communist, that is a communist, to go away like that. But the American is super communist, they control the communist. And to me, I see like this one. To put in the book or to translate, to research what you want to know.
Oh, no. What you have told us is...
You have done an outstanding job. Yeah. We're very pleased that you could speak with us today.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for an hour and a half,
yeah.
Normally 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And we could all sit here for another 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I think what we'd like...
I say a lot of things, but to me, like this one, when the Rotary Club invited me to come and say, hey, how long do you want me to talk? I say 1 hour. They say, I look at and I speak. And before 1 hour, I say, okay, right now I say, want to conclude. What you want to ask me? And they say, that's it, 1 hour already. But why like that? Because I don't prepare nothing.
No, but it's...
Everything that...
It's a remarkable story, Mr.
Everything Lee. In me, because if you go back to the war for the Vietnam and the communist war over there, in the war, that's very complicated. You know, but because to me, one small country and low civilization, like you go in the jungle and all the mountain people, and they don't know anything. They just have something to cut the tree and they're so innocent. But in the jungle, they have a lot of mineral and they don't know. And you know, and you know, you're smart, you know. And you say, hey, how I can get that? So, to get in there, I have to help them. To get make friend with them. Mm-hmm. And after you make friend with them, you took it and they don't know. That is the way for the smart country to do it. I feel sorry for all low education country and low civilization. We now, but if the rich country don't do that, they start to go down too. If they want to keep on the top, they have to be on the top all the time. See, one way to the other way they have to do. But to me, the American, they control everything by the computer. The computer make the plan at least about 20 years. With my mind, with your mind, cannot make a plan for 1 year. They pre-plan for 20 years, what they have to do, 20 years. And there's so many, like the American have so many branch to do the business. Or if another Vietnam won't work, and they go to South Korea, or they go to Africa, they go to like that. But everywhere, to connect, that is CIA and FBI, to connect. They're so smart. To me, the FBI and the CIA can make white become black and black become white. And they can destroy, they can flip over and reversion for one country so easy, just one flick and a finger. But they study for that, and they do for that. And so when I get up to everything, the first time I come over here, day and night, I learned, I dig down in the library and everything, and said, why we lost? Why we so strong like that and we lost? After 10 years, I say, Americans don't need to win. They need what they want. They don't need to win. They can proud to say to the world, say, we lost the war in Vietnam. But that's it. What they make. But you're just thinking like I thought. Like in Iraq now, 3,000 soldiers get killed. Oh, I'm like, withdraw right away. You see? And have to withdraw. And in Iran, 50,000 still don't withdraw because there have to be something very important for them to stay that long and get killed 50,000. I don't know. But sometimes, like I fly and I know I flew in a jungle, like a big jungle. See, the American built a runway in the middle of the jungle. No Vietnamese can get in there. What do you know? They landing and take off every day. You don't know what's in there. See, a lot of secret things we don't know.
Did you ever fly here in the United States? Did you ever fly again since the war?
I fly with one cross dust one time.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And when I get there, he think I'm a pilot before, and he show up. He flip around and he makes a spin. And I say, I have to. I say, hey, I don't know. So long, I don't fly. And so I throw up everything. Don't let me throw up. Would you please land for me? And I feel so bad. And when he landing, I pulled his face. So I said, damn you, don't ever show up. You know, all the pilot get killed because they show up. And I don't want to get killed with you. I have to bleed, and I say everything when they land. That's it. No way I can do it.
What pilot was that? I might know him.
No, he's a long runner. He's retired.
Not somebody from Abbeville?
No, he's somewhere in what is it? Gato.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's not Shannon's dad. Swear, Lloyd. Swear?
No, he's old guy. Okay. So right now I'm 72. And he's around there too, the same, but I said, damn it, you never do that.
Well, Mr. Lee, we can't thank you enough for sharing this information with you. We've got to get him to a meeting.
Yeah.
But we very much want to thank you for sharing all of it.
The most important I want to say, like this one, the Vietnamese work very hard. But they work very hard with the seafood business. They won't make it. The shrimp I will make it, but the seafood, like the shrimp, because some people are smart enough, when they make it, they retire. But right now, everybody make it, you know why?
Why?
BP. The BP, that is the one come from the sky to help them, you see. And I told them, the first thing, you have to remember your tax, have to prepare the tax. Don't get the money and spend and don't have no pay tax in the US. And the second thing, if you want to continue in business, use your money, keep up with your boat, take care of your boat in a good shape, and from there continue to do business. Before, because they try to buy a big boat with the monthly note too high, hard to survive. And the insurance is so high, and the note is so high, almost about 80% give up if the PP don't come out. Now the PP come out, and I think they survive. Yeah. And everything like your build the meetings, you build the thing to teach them. And for everything, I very appreciate that, you see. And I know you over here, you only want to try to do everything. And right now I have her, mm-hmm. You see.
She's good.
Yeah. And she will help you a lot, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, Mr. Lee, you and I are not separated by many years. Trust me. All right? And I've been to lots of meetings.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for two, you couldn't have what they did today. That's true, and I'm not saying that without her translation from our English speak, which is not always perfect translatable.
Yeah.
But she, Carl and I are sitting in the back watching, and she does a wonderful job. It wouldn't have happened. Yeah. And so you have large numbers of Vietnamese working in the industry that we all enjoy. But to make that happen, it's a Sea Grant funded project with a Sea Grant agent growing up in the industry that can talk to the people. And since Carl and I, neither one are Vietnamese.
The church I built over there. And the one I sponsor all the priests over there.
Oh.
the church can care 3,000 people. But when we finish it, we put 4,500 people in there. Because everybody just get one suit to come and sit, and they don't, or they have to sit in the floor.
And where is the church? In Ho Chi Minh City?
No, sorry, in the Pleiku, in Kum Tum, it's in a high plateau, in middle to the
middle
of the floor, close to the Laos.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
I thought you have to interview me something else, but that is so easy.